Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night, wherever you are around the world. This is the seventh episode of DevelopPod. Welcome. And this episode, we're focused on feedback, exploring giving and receiving feedback.
Before you tell me how to do it better, before you lay out your big plans for changing, fixing, and improving me, before you teach me how to pick myself up and dust myself off so that I can be shiny and successful, know this. I've heard it before. I've been graded, rated and ranked, coached, screened and scored. I've been picked first, picked last, and not picked at all. And that was just in kindergarten.
That quote was from Stone and Heen from their very interesting book, Thanks for the Feedback.
So what are we talking about here in terms of feedback? I went to a workshop with somebody called John Harris a few years back, and he inspired me to think about feedback. John Harris actually works in the area of family constellations, a group therapy kind of exercise. If you're interested in that, look at it by all means. But this is his quote on feedback. It's a process in which information about the past or present phenomena influences the same present or future phenomena. It includes any information you get about yourself. It's a process, and there's movement or change across time. It's how we learn from our experiences. I think that's important. How we learn from our experiences, from other people and from life. And without it, we're static. With it, we're adaptive and we're learning beings.
Well, I'm, for one, going to look up that John Harris. So onto the EFL context more specifically, and when we think about feedback, a good place to look might be the British Council. A quote on feedback for learners at the British Council's teachingenglish.org.uk site. Feedback is information a teacher or another speaker, including another learner, gives to the learners on how well they're doing, either to help the learner improve specific points or to help them plan their learning. So, of course, learner feedback is a key aspect. But then what about teachers and teacher development? I think for them and for us, feedback is just simply information that that we as teachers or trainers, managers, or other members of a teaching organization shares on how well a teacher is doing or how well the learning and the teaching are achieving their goals. This is generally to help teachers improve specific points in their practice or programmatic improvement overall.
But as logical as that may be, how well they being the teachers are doing presumes some kind of judgmental attitude and presupposes that we can judge and that this judgment is also useful. So in this podcast today, we'll look at alternatives to this very much top-down attitude. So why did we choose to look at feedback? Why is it important? Well, John Hattie, who I became interested in some time ago, headed a team of researchers looking at research for over 20 years. And feedback came in the top five of teaching interventions that have a positive effect on learning, according to meta research that he did. If you're interested in that, see Visible Learning by John Hattie.
And in addition, there's the Educational Endowment Foundation, who teamed up with the Sutton Trust to create the Teaching and Learning Toolkit, which is designed to provide guidance on how to use various resources and improve the attainment of disadvantaged students. So feedback in this study was the absolute number one influential factor in all of the things they looked at. So it was quite striking.
Thanks, Matthew. So can this research be transferred to teacher learning and teacher development scenarios? Well, we think cautiously yes, as there is an absence of other research specific to teacher development. So what types of feedback are out there? Well, we can give and receive feedback, of course, on a frequent basis throughout our non-working day. And just to give you a small example, if you're crossing the road and someone shouts, "Idiot!" That's the kind of feedback. Whether or not you choose to take it as feedback is up to you. But we're constantly giving and receiving feedback throughout our daily lives. And in our working day as teachers, this feedback will normally take two forms.
So the two main forms that we could look at of feedback are coaching and evaluating. So coaching being focused on more technical aspects of the lesson and the plan to assist teacher development. Coaching is done typically by someone with the experience and skills to bring to that role. And crucially, the person receiving the feedback in this dynamic must feel receptive, and that the person giving this coaching feedback is qualified, knowledgeable, and able to do it well. Ideally, this would therefore be a mentor. In addition to coaching, we've got evaluating feedback. This is different in that it's rating against a specific set of standards. So this is usually done by someone with greater authority, a manager, senior member of staff, or an external moderating body like Ofsted or Accreditation UK.
But there's another kind of feedback as well. This arguably falls within the realm of evaluating, but some people put it separately, and that is praising or appreciating. Obviously, this helps to acknowledge and motivate a teacher potentially. This, for me, at least, is very much part of an evaluative mindset, as opposed to coaching, which is arguably separate. Now, is it possible to even separate out the strands of feedback into coaching and evaluation? Perhaps, although obviously there are gray areas and one may kind of dissolve into the other.
But of course, when we think about it, all feedback is colored by the relationship between the giver and the receiver of that feedback. I think that's something we simply can't avoid. And sometimes there's a disparity in these relationships or roles. The two people can experience tensions based on a disparity. For example, if the observer, the giver of the feedback, say someone's observed a class and is going to give feedback to their peers, but they're required to give this in an evaluative dynamic, an evaluative way. A peer rating a peer may result in quite a bit feelings of discomfort. Or if the observer of a lesson gives feedback of the coaching variety or more technical feedback, and either party feels like that person is, in fact, not the best person to do it, and maybe not comfortable in the coaching role. Just two examples of, I think, many potential disparities leading to tensions in the feedback process.
So what can happen when there is this mismatch, this clash between the roles and the type of feedback that the parties are asked to give? Well, in our experience, it can lead to a variety of emotions where there is this miscommunication, perhaps fear on some level or frustration, perhaps resentment, disharmony, or just a lack of action. So aligning people, their roles, and the purpose, the goals in feedback is extremely important. There's also a real importance of setting the frame of feedback, i.e. the etiquette around feedback, ground rules and the parameters for that feedback. And these things should be made explicitly clear within the process. Within teaching institutions, there tends to be two main scenarios where we either give or receive explicit feedback. The first being formal class observations, and the second being less formal observations, usually peer observations.
The other main scenario is where a teacher gives self-feedback as part of a reflective process. For example, with a self-observation using video or with a teaching diary. That is a large topic that I think is worthy of our future DevelopPod episode. So now let's zoom in on receiving feedback, simply because it's arguably more important than how we give it, in fact. But the question is, are we typically set up for receiving feedback? Are we trained? Are we guided in how receiving feedback happens? So let's focus on receiving rather than the giving. There are arguably many more people in a professional setting who need to receive feedback rather than give it. And it's also the receivers who ultimately decide whether and how to change, how the feedback is actually ultimately affecting what's going on. So I think it's smart to focus on receiving feedback, thinking about how it's not as passive as it sounds, or at least shouldn't be, and how the receiver needs to take ownership of the feedback, be proactive in the process, and ultimately, ideally, feel empowered and not only listen, but feel heard. So Christian, I know you've got some really useful suggestions specifically for the receiver feedback.
Start off by aiming to guide the feedback on areas where you specifically would like feedback. This may be possible within some scenarios at work. It may not be in others, depending on the setup. But if it is, then aim to guide the feedback. If it's not possible, then at least aim to keep an open mind to the feedback that the giver of feedback gives. And you may learn from whatever is given if you adopt a growth mindset. Trouble is, a lot of us put up defenses, right? So aim to take down those defenses and adopt a growth an exploratory mindset, and take all feedback as an opportunity to learn. Ask the giver of feedback specific questions to understand further what they think they witnessed. And that can be an incredibly informative source of information. And then listen impartially, simply noticing emotional reactions in yourself. It's really important to be honest with that, I think. Remove any perceived blame as well, or any loading that you perceive, whether it's good or bad, and take that good or bad out of it. The feedback is just feedback. It's not necessarily evaluative. And decide where it would be useful to take that feedback. If you feel it would be useful to experiment with something, for example, as a result of the feedback, then do so. And if you don't feel that would be appropriate or useful, then don't. You are in control. That depends on the workplace scenario. And if you're being told to do something, then you will need to filter and decide what it is that's important for you to do. But by and large, try and take control, guide it, listen, and take from it what you can and put into practice what you think is useful.
Well, that's all well and good, of course. But in reality, being defensive is in fact absolutely normal for all of us. We looked into the physiology of feedback in order to explore this question. It turns out that negative feedback can often trigger a flight or fight response in the hypothalamus. That's the prehistoric reptilian part of our brains. And so this experience is intensely memorable. Whereas positive feedback triggers a dopamine response in the limbic system, the more recent part of the brain. And this is soothing and pleasurable, but it's also much less memorable. So the responses to threats and unpleasantness are faster, stronger, harder to inhibit than responses to opportunities and pleasure. I think that has a lot to say about just what happens in the moment where feedback is taken. So what does this perhaps suggest about the way feedback can be delivered?
So traditionally, or perhaps conventionally, we've come to take an approach as givers of feedback, which tends to be around the kiss, kick, kiss approach, i.e. we say something positive first and then something constructively critical and sandwiched by the final positive thing. So kiss, kick, kiss. There's also a model which is called the medal and mission model, which is by Jeff Petty, I believe, evidence-based teaching. This is where reinforcement is given through a lot of positive statements, i.e. medals, and then statements are given in order to help improve, i.e. missions. So that's medal and mission. But both models, in my opinion, are based around judgment. There's an evaluative component to both. No matter how much we praise, no matter how well we phrase our constructive criticism, no matter how we sandwich it, it's undeniably evaluative. So the premise is that the giver of feedback can manage and balance the positive and negative, and that the teacher receiving the feedback needs to feel safe in that for any constructive feedback to be taken on board, and that we need to keep reinforcing the positive to help maintain the teacher's self-confidence. But in my opinion, however well-intentioned that approach may be, it operates from this place of judgment. So we can improve and correct, a bit like training a dog, I guess. And surely, as teachers, we're much more than dogs to be trained, to be offered reward and punishments, and have someone else manage our emotions. It's, in my opinion, an entirely flawed strategy. However, it may be appropriate, maybe more appropriate, with inexperienced teachers. In the case, for example, where you're training up teachers to be newly qualified, perhaps on a CELTA course. There are indeed criteria by which teacher trainers need to judge, the CELTA 5 criteria. So we can't escape evaluation. But with experienced teachers, it's much less easy to justify it.
Well, I'd have to agree with all of that, and especially the idea that for experienced teachers a bit further down the path, I think one of the things that's top importance not to carry with us from our initial teacher training experiences, for example, is the evaluative feedback dynamic as the kind of template that we would expect. I think we need to, at some point, let that go and leave it behind. And hopefully through a strong reflective practice in our own daily experiences and our daily practices, that we would make that shift ourselves in various feedback scenarios. It also reminds me of some quotes from Kosh, 1999. It is debatable to what extent teachers will improve their performance in the classroom from being told what is wrong with their teaching. A common mistake is the assumption that people improve and develop best through the comments and knowledge of others. This may be true at the initial teacher training stage, but I contend that for experienced teachers, this is not the case, since genuine development comes about through self-awareness, reflection, and an open-mindedness to other approaches and styles. So with those quotes in mind, it's important that we reframe feedback.
So how do we do this in reality? How do we take out perceptions of positive and negative and move beyond evaluative feedback? This is something I've been working on in my own giving and receiving of feedback as a pedagogy manager. So I think it's useful to focus on what the needs are of the teacher, the management, the organization, and particularly the student, and really focus on the student's need. And through discussing the student's needs with the teacher, then the emotional comes out of it. It becomes more objective, if you like. And then with the teacher, the giver of feedback can work in partnership with the teacher to aim to meet those needs. So it's a needs based feedback, as opposed to an evaluative judgment of what the teacher is or isn't doing.
That brings to mind two frameworks that can be used to give and receive non-judgmental feedback. The first is cooperative development, CD. This was conceived of by Julian Edge, specifically for collegial communication and feedback giving in an ELT context. The other one is called NVC, or nonviolent communication. And this is Marshall Rosenberg's conflict resolution mediation framework that I think could really also work in an ELT context, especially in a collegial context where critical friends and folks who are peers can really work together productively to give each other feedback.
So in the spirit of cooperative development and a listening approach, let's look at some suggestions for the giver of feedback. First of all, I would say encourage the teacher to take down defenses. So start by thanking the teacher, for example, for the observation, and then encourage a growth mindset quite explicitly. Say this is a chance to take on board some shared ideas, to develop some shared ideas, and that we all need to develop. We all are learning beings, if you like.
We can also start by saying explicitly that we've only seen a snapshot and just acknowledge that we have a limited scope, in fact, and that the information that we give will only be through our eyes and ears based on this limited snapshot, that it's not an objective truth, that it's not word from down on high.
And ask the teacher to reflect on the lesson with the areas of focus in mind. Hopefully these areas will be pre-decided and the teacher will have had some input.
As well, the giver of feedback should also be a listener. So listen to the teacher and clarify what it is you think they're saying, if and when any of their messages are not entirely clear to you. And every time you do so, you're encouraging them to see you as someone who's actually trying to understand what they're saying.
And to facilitate that listening, ask questions, whatever is appropriate to the lesson, to tease out more information. For example, the question might be, how does this lesson fit into your sequence of teaching? Or what were the lesson outcomes? And did the students achieve those outcomes? Perhaps also, was it possible to know if the students made progress in that lesson? Why not? And how do you know if students are making progress from lesson to lesson and from week to week? Why did you make such and such decision today? Is there anything you might do differently, of course, is a typical question. And what might you do in the next lesson or lessons in the light of what happened today? Some of those questions were adapted from The Learning Spy by David Didow. Look at www.learningspy.co.uk.
So while listening as feedback givers, we can reformulate what the teacher is saying as necessary. Mirror back to them anything that may be unclear, but also something that's clear and important, and guide and assist them in keeping the discussion on track.
Yeah, and at the end of the discussion, then ask the teacher to summarize what has been discussed, what they've learned, and also say what you've learned, and what they would take forwards and how they will integrate that into their development. However, if you're acting in the role of an evaluator, perhaps it's an official observation and you're a manager or a senior teacher, then you will almost certainly need to feed in some element of evaluation, typically, not always. But if you're doing so, then at least make it clear that you're doing that. Make sure it's transparent. Justify your evaluations. And as giver of feedback myself, I have quite often asked the teacher to participate in that evaluation. So how are peer observations markedly different? In our opinion, they shouldn't be evaluative. That can bring up all sorts of issues and potential problems between the teachers concerned. According to Richards and Farrell, 2005, peer observations should, for the observer, be to see how someone else does things. For example, how another teacher deals with the daily problems one faces in teaching, and also to discover other teaching strategies that maybe the observer hasn't tried before. And for the observee, it should be to get an objective view of the lesson from the observer, or at least objective as possible through their eyes. And that person, the observer, is there to collect information about the lesson. And for the observee, it's not about getting feedback on one's own teaching in a qualitative sense. That will avoid any conflict.
You mentioned seeing how someone else does it and discovering other teaching strategies that you haven't tried through a peer observation. I think there's a particular way that many teachers, maybe who don't have access to peer relationships that can give them peer observation opportunities, is the sharing done by teachers in PLN, online social networks, teacher blogs, where teachers describe lessons. Essentially, it's what's called unseen observation, where a lesson is described and discussed among teachers. The kind of sharing that happens online is essentially always non-evaluative. It's almost always supportive. It's almost always a dialogue where everyone can learn from.
So moving forwards, a lot to think about here. If you're a teacher or a teacher trainer or a manager, whatever your role is, perhaps reflect on some of these ideas that we've brought forwards in terms of nonviolent communication, in terms of cooperative development, just simply a listening approach as opposed to judging. Be there as a listener and as a learner when you watch a lesson. And when you're giving feedback, what is the person to whom you're giving feedback needing, wanting? And connect in terms of human relationships. Learn together. It's a learning experience together, shared experience.
So Rumi says, out beyond ideas of right and wrong, there is a field. I'll meet you there.
I'll meet you there, Matthew. And I'll see you again in the next developer. So that's all for now. And see you next time. Thanks for joining us from Matthew Noble.
Yeah, see you out in the field.
And myself, Christian Tiplady, see you in the field. Take care now.